From the Opubco studios at Britain and Broadway, you're listening to a News OK podcast.
You're listening to Thunder Rumblings podcast from the News OK studios in Oklahoma City. I'm Mike Sherman, here with our Thunder beat writer Darnell Mayberry and the intern. That's right, I said it, the intern, Tariq Lee of Washington, D.C., who grew up a Lakers fan in the shadow of the nation's capital. In the nation's capital, in the shadow of the great Washington Wizards. Darnell, they're not raising them the way they used to.
It breaks my heart. Breaks my first ever ball game was a Bullets game.
Le Bullets.
Landover, Maryland. Here we got a guy. It grew up in the nation's capital, and he goes all the way across the country to become a fan of the Lake Show.
Woodrow Wilson High School, is that right?
That's correct.
And of course, that's not a basketball city or anything. You know, at Washington, D.C., they got nothing going on there for basketball. Dave Bing, Red Auerbach.
Elgin Baylor.
Elgin Baylor. Nah, there's not much basketball there. I think I'll root for a team halfway across the country. Explain yourself.
Well, I grew up a Bullets fan. Weber, Howard, Whitney, Tracy Murray. Then they just all left, and they went from the Bullets to the Wizards, and it just went a different direction. I didn't like them anymore.
Did you not like the name change?
I didn't.
Well, I didn't like the name change either. I am a Bullets fan from when they were in Baltimore. The Baltimore Bullets. Wes Unseld. He had the big hips and the afro. Jack Maron. Elvin Hayes. You name it. I saw them play against the Milwaukee Bucks in the NBA Finals. And that's so long ago that nobody remembers of me. So let's talk about the game from the NBA Finals that we remember. Last night, Los Angeles Lakers 91, Celtics 84. Darnell, you skipped me the other day. I wanted to podcast with you, and we didn't quite get there.
You're going to put that on me, huh?
I'm going to put a little bit on you.
I think you ducked out on me.
Well, listen, here's the deal. You made all kinds of proclamations, and you know what's funny about it? It didn't look so good on Sunday night. Now, how's it look Wednesday morning?
It looks great is how it looks. I mean, I said after the game one, I said the Lakers in seven originally, and then I changed my prediction. I thought the Lakers were going to win in six. Now, I really do think the Lakers are going to give up game four in Boston. I think they're going to come back and win game five. I think they're going to go home, get some home cooking, and win in game six. I think they're going to take care of the Celtics in six games. They don't have an answer for the weapons, the Lakers' weapons. I mean, you got Derek Fisher who's coming in, giving you 11 points in the fourth quarter. Kobe Bryant had 29 points on 29 shots, and they still can't really, you know, stop him from having an impact in other areas. Paul Pierce has yet to show up in this series. Kevin Garnett has had one good game. Rajon Rondo has had one out of three good games. So it's like, The Lakers' weapons are just overpowering the Celtics right now. And unless the Celtics can get everyone on the same page, this is going to end in six games.
Okay, Tariq, Darnell changes predictions about as often as you change favorite teams. Okay, so we're good with that. Here's my question about the whole series. Isn't it just a Paul Pierce question? Paul Pierce, the guy's an NBA All-Star. The guy's one of the great Celtics of all time. I know it was crazy saying that until 2008, but now he is. The guy is a prolific scorer and a prolific big game scorer, and he really has been a no-show through three games. Isn't it just a matter of him showing up?
He has to show up, but the defense is just hounding him. Like last year, two years ago, it was Ariza, and Ariza couldn't really stay with him. He was long, but he wasn't a big body. You have Artest now, and he's putting that body and that physicality on Pierce, and he doesn't know what to do with it.
It's strange that he doesn't know what to do with it because the Lakers did something very interesting last night, and that was a pick and roll with their point guard and Kobe Bryant that really shook the point guard loose. You know what's going on with the Celtics offense right now and the pick and roll and efforts to try to free Paul Pierce?
They can't because Ron Artest, like Tariq said, Ron Artest is just a bulldog. I mean, he loves playing Paul Pierce physically, and Paul Pierce has no answer for him on there. And give the Lakers credit as a whole. Ron Artest is not doing this by himself. I mean, they have help defense coming at Paul Pierce, and he's been shown a lot of different looks to where he can't get it going, and he's going to have to defer to Rajon Rondo. And as long as he's doing that, and, you know, as Rajon Rondo is trying to get Kevin Garnett involved, it's like a trickle-down effect. They really don't know who to go to at what moment in the game. And I think the Celtics are sort of stumbling right now offensively because, you know, they really just can't get it going, and they look unsure of themselves right now.
Paul Pierce, 12 shots last night. 12 shots in spite of the fact that Ron Artest picked up two fouls with like the first 2 minutes. That's the point of the game when I thought, hey, the Celtics are not seizing this opportunity. They're not. I looked at halftime and I thought, geez, Paul Pierce, this is his game. With Artest and foul trouble, they never really adjusted to that. Guys, another question about this series right now. Kevin Garnett showed up last night. It looked like they tried very early to get him going. He was beating guys down the court. And then Kevin Garnett, you know, he finishes with a nice game. Probably the best of the series. He'll have 25 points, 11 of 16 shooting, big shots down. But a problem I see for the Celtics, they're not strong with the ball interior. What's going on there?
I'll take this one. Lakers are just too big. Like, Garnett gets down there, he does this fadeaway move, or Perkins gets in there. In the regular season, Perkins would get it. He have a little, maybe a little floater shot that he'd throw up, and it would put pressure on the defense. Now he gets it, he's just deferring to Pierce, deferring to Allen, deferring to Rondo. He doesn't know what to do with the ball in the post. And Garnett, he's just, I think Gasol has came out here, and 2 years ago was all, Gasol is soft, Gasol is this. He's gotten physical with him. He doesn't know what to do. Like, last night, he came up big. They got him involved early. But after that, he kind of disappeared.
We had Ray Allen look like, you know, Michael Jordan in game two.
Jesus.
My son said, we traded.
We being the Thunder.
Ray Allen for Jeff Green. He was watching that game. What was that all about? And then last night, that trade looks pretty good. Somehow this has got to even out. Ray Allen shows up as Ray Allen, not Jesus Shuttlesworth, not Tracy Murray. Sorry, and somewhere in the middle he shows up as Ray Allen. Then what does the game look like?
Ugly. I mean, for the Celtics, I mean, you look at game one; they were 1 of 10 from three. Last night in game three, I don't know what they shot from three. But when they don't shoot those threes well, they struggle. I mean, they need transition defense. I mean, they need that transition offense. Ray Allen coming, spotting up on the three-point line. Rajon Rondo finding him in transition. When they don't have that offense, I mean, with Paul Pierce stymied by Ron Artest, that offense is bad. I mean, they don't have many guys that they can go to. When Ron Artest is doing what he's doing against Paul Pierce, Ray Allen is going 0-for-13, and Rajon Rondo is really held in check because he's trying to get Kevin Garnett involved. And his other guys aren't hitting enough shots to free up the things in the paint for him. So that offense is not good when they're not making perimeter shots.
What I'm saying, though, is Ray Allen has been Hall of Fame, and then he's been terrible. What happens when Ray Allen shows up and delivers a Ray Allen performance? 18 points, gets to the line a little bit. That's the game I'm looking for from the Celtics. That's the game I think we're going to see in game four.
If he plays like that, they'll win. Like Donnell said, I think they'll win this.
Solid.
They'll win this game, what, Thursday? Because I don't see the Lakers winning two games in a row in Boston. I got them winning this game Thursday, Friday. I mean, Sunday they'll come back. Lakers take that and then go home and they just finish it them off.
Fun numbers, fun games with math. You hear people say, oh, no, the Celtics now have to win 3 out of 4. Well, the Lakers have just won 2 out of 3. The game before them is game four. It's Thursday night at the Boston, whatever they're calling that garden right now. I got the Celtics. I still got the Celtics. I had them in 6. I got to tell you, I probably got them in 7 now.
So someone else is changing their prediction now.
We have seen the Boston Celtics play very well on the road.
So you're saying that now they're going to have to get 2 in L.A.?
What I'm saying is they're going to get 2 in Boston, and they'll need 1 in L.A.
As in, they got game 2 in L.A., and then they're going to have to get either game 6 or game 7, likely game 7.
I'm saying
in LA. So they're gonna have to win 2 games in LA.
They're gonna win the next 2 at home. I mean, that's happening. The Celtics are winning the next 2 at home. Rajon Rondo, Doc Rivers is gonna coach. I mean, he literally is. He's allowed to coach in this.
Well, tell him to start, because Paul Pierce, he's been a no-show so far. And if Doc Rivers is who he thought he was when we first sat down here, then he'd do something to get Paul Pierce free from Ron Artest, and so far that hadn't happened.
Here's what Doc Rivers is getting criticized for. Last time I talked to you, not on this program, but last time, Kevin Garnett, he's done, he's washed up, he's terrible. Did you see what he did last night? He looked like the old Kevin Garnett.
Yeah, we'll see if that lasts.
He's still got it. Game one, Rondo was so-so. Ray Allen looks terrible. Ray Allen, they got him loose. They had a game plan, and he was dotting Kobe Bryant's eye in that game. So what I'm saying to you is this. Doc Rivers can figure this out. And the Celtics are going to have to stop and make one big important change. They overload ball side, right? They're not rotating back. I saw a lot of times last night where Derek Fisher was getting all the way to the rim. He was beating his guy, and there was nobody rotating over. I don't know what was going on. I think they're going to have to stop cheating quite the way they did, the way they make a living under Tom Thibodeau. Yes, sir.
It's that pick and roll, Mike. In the Magic series, they were having problems at first. Then they switched to pick and roll. Jameer would come off that pick, and he gave Rondo 20 points, 25-plus points every game after that when they figured him out. The Boston's been exposed yet again. Derek Fisher's 35 years old. He's taking Rondo to the cup. Gasol comes over there, sets that pick, and they try to fight through. They never switch. They try to fight through. Fisher comes off with a strong hand, bank, layup, something like that. Always to the left side. They cannot stop that pick and roll. They can't. That's their problem right there.
Derek Fisher has not drank from the fountain of youth. If you think Derek Fisher's got a lot more games like that, I got some waterfront property for you in Guymon, Tyreek.
My question to you, Mr. Cousy, is what makes you so confident that the Celtics are going to win the next two at home? I mean, this game three was theirs for the taking. The crowd was the loudest it's been all season. They're blowing the roof off this place. They get off to that 6-0 run. KG's got it going early. And they blow the game. I mean, that was if ever there was a game for the Celtics to win, that was the game for them to win. The Lakers took care of their business on their home court in their first game at home. They did lose game two, but I don't see if they couldn't win their first game at home. What makes you so confident they can come back and win the next two inside TD Garden?
Okay, here's Darnell's philosophy. He says,
"No, just answer the question."
What Darnell likes to do is watch a game and he'll say, I don't see anywhere that they can improve. I don't see any adjustments for
them. I'm sorry, Doc Rivers and Phil Jackson agreed with me.
I don't see any. So here's the adjustment, and it's not complicated. And it's amazing that we say this, but it's absolutely true. It was the truest change from game one to two. You know what the biggest change was? It wasn't Ray Allen's shot falling. It was effort. The Boston Celtics played harder, and they didn't play as hard last night. Some of it's coasting after you get off to an early lead. Sometimes veteran teams relax a little bit too much at home.
Yeah, and sometimes, as Charles Barkley says, you know, you don't get old. You don't get healthy when you're old. You die. The Celtics are old. They're playing on one-day turnarounds now. There's a reason Ray Allen struggled in Game 3 after going hitting 8 threes in Game 2. He had a one-day turnaround after a cross-country flight in which he lost 3 hours. Those old legs, he's running across all that room on the court, running off all those screens. That's taking a toll on the Celtics. Kevin Garnett, I have my doubts about whether he's going to be able to duplicate that performance from Game 2. There was a scathing column in the Boston Herald where a guy called Garnett finished, said he needs to retire. I think he read that, and it became bulletin board material. I think the Celtics are too old to with these one-day turnarounds to get up like they have done in the past, like we saw them in 08, and I just don't think they're going to be the tough road team that we saw all playoffs, because the Lakers are better than the Cavs and the Magic and the freaking the Miami Heat, for crying out loud.
At some point, the Lakers bench will be exposed for what it is. That's what having three games in Boston is all about. Sometimes you can make your bench less relevant. But over the course of a series, things tend to reveal themselves. The Lakers' lack of a bench is going to cost them. Look at what the Celtics
can do. It's already cost them.
And it's going to cost them more, and that's the change. The other thing is this. The 50-50 balls all went to the Lakers. I don't know why the Celtics front line played so soft with the ball last night. I can't tell you. But I can tell you this. What they beat them at in Game 2 was beating them down the court. Beating them down the court. And they'll do that again because the bigs, Paul Gasol and Robert Swift in a foot race. I got Robert Swift. I'm telling you, Darnell. He's the slowest guy I've ever seen in the NBA.
I think that goes back to effort. I think that goes back to the effort you're speaking of. Paul Gasol didn't really give as much in Game 3 as he had given in Games 1 and 2. I mean, it's as simple as that. KG gave a lot more effort than Paul Gasol in Game 3.
Robert Swift, Paul Gasol, foot race. Who you got?
Paul Gasol.
Man, I got Robert Swift.
Here's something that you need to talk about. The referees, the officiating. Do you think it's as bad as I think it is? Because I'm a guy who I don't talk about officiating. This thing is getting a little ridiculous.
You know, the referee who looks like you, your older brother, more muscular brother.
What's his name?
He was called, I don't know, he's muscled up Darnell. I call him Steroids Darnell. And the thing about it is he doesn't look exactly like Darnell because Darnell doesn't wear his hair the same way. He's a man of many hairstyles. But anyway, when Darnell first got here to cover the NBA, I swear. I was like, holy smokes.
You're getting off topic. What do you think? The question on the table is, what do you think of the officiating in this series?
What's happened in this series, unfortunately, and it's this rule change that you can review things in the last 2 minutes. I think there's some problems. But what's happened, it's what happened to every sport. Every time the encroachment of instant replay, it becomes a crutch, and guys don't make calls. This has been a paralyzing thing in this game. I think it undermines the confidence of the most confident officials in all of sports. I'm not kidding. I think as a whole, the NBA officials run out, the guys who sell their calls and have more confidence in their calls than any other league. Tim Donaghy, I don't want to hear that. These guys are good. We watch the replay year after year, game after game. NBA officials is some of the best quality control there is in all of sports. And I think it's slipping. I think we see some guys lacking confidence. It worries me. My man Joey Crawford was calling. I mean, he took the Celtics out of game one. That was the story of game one. You say game two, it was the story of...
Kobe Bryant had five fouls.
Five fouls. The possession, blown possession calls was the story of game three. And, you know, some other things like, you know, Lamar Odom getting hacked by Rondo and the ball hitting off his... That replay, that reliance on replay, it's really exposing some really flaws to the system. I think they're going to have to look at
that. Well, the question is, what can the league do about it? Because the catch-22 is you want to get the calls right, and some of those calls they did get right. The ball that went off on KG, it cost the Celtics, but they made the right call. So the replay does work in instances. But, again, when you have certain other instances where Rajon Rondo clearly fouls Lamar Odom and it's out on him, you want to get things right, but then sometimes it's a catch-22. So what can the league do about it?
Lastly, what you hope about this is you hope that what's happened with other officiating advances in technology, they added a third guy on the court. You know, used to just have two officials. They had a third guy on the court, and guess what? It was like all of a sudden one of the guys was zoned out of the game. When that first happened, it didn't have the intended effect. These guys may adjust. They may not be paralyzed. I think in the NFL it's improved some. You know, I think a lot of pass interference calls get blown because guys are like, well, let's just call something and then they'll reverse it, or they'll look at whether it's uncatchable and these kind of things. So maybe they'll adjust. But in the middle of this series, we have a problem. We have a problem. I think there's a lack of confidence. And also, it's a tough to officiate game. Whenever you got these two teams, the length of the Lakers, it looks to me, you know, covering a lot of high school games through the years, get him off his back. Every time somebody doesn't have blockout position, somebody gets a rebound, looks like they're going over the back. The Lakers go over their back all the time. The difference is the Lakers are, in some ways, a head taller. Glenn Big Baby Davis is having an atrocious time with this, especially when he gets an offensive glass. But it looks like the Lakers are reaching over. They're not calling a lot of this stuff. They're letting a lot of hacks get and there's a lack of confidence. You also have two big-time coaches on the bench that are intimidators. I don't know. Everybody knows Phil Jackson's an intimidator. Did anybody see Doc Rivers run out onto the court? I don't think you're allowed to do that.
Why was that not a technical foul? You're talking about all the breaks Boston and the Lakers are getting. Doc Rivers should have been teed up for that.
And I thought it was home court advantage. Rivers is in L.A., runs on the court, calls a timeout, they don't do anything. I didn't understand that.
Yeah, I thought that was odd. Now, one of the things that they probably let him go, because they didn't miss the timeout, they didn't catch the timeout, he was screaming in their ears. Right? That's probably what happened. Let's shift gears. I want to talk Thunder for a minute, Darnell. You've had reports, other people have had reports, that the Thunder coaching staff's getting ready to undergo some changes. Looks like Mo Cheeks and Ron Adams may be headed to Chicago. The subtraction of those two guys, big impact or little impact on the Thunder?
Huge impact. Not a big impact, a huge impact. Ron Adams transformed this defense.
Hand in the face.
Hand in the face, hands up. Kevin Durant, hands up. You know, without him, it's going to be interesting to see what happens to this defense. I think that the principles are now there. If he does indeed leave for the Bulls and joins Tom Thibodeau's staff in Chicago, the principles are still here. I think Kevin Durant, Thabo Sefolosha, Jeff Green, Russell Westbrook, I think they have the foundation that Ron Adams and Scottie Brooks has instilled into them. But it's going to be tough to not have that voice every day preaching the same methods over and over and over again. And Mo Cheeks, you can't say enough about what he did with Russell Westbrook as well as Eric Maynard. People always forget about Eric Maynard coming in as a rookie over from Utah in that midseason trade. But, I mean, they've got two well-established point guards, young point guards now, who Mo Cheeks had a great impact on. So those are going to be two huge losses if they both do leave.
Yes, you raised a question. Is it possible that the Thunder fills one of those spots with Mike Brown, the deposed coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers?
It's possible. I've had some conversations where I think Mike Brown is going to sit it out and wait possibly on another head coaching job. The difference between, you know, a Mike Brown and Mo Cheeks is that Mo Cheeks had been fired twice. In Portland and in Philadelphia. So he had to sort of come in and reignite his career and get a jump start as an assistant. And he still might not ever be a head coach again, but he had to reinvent himself. Mike Brown did a phenomenal job in Cleveland. He just couldn't get the ultimate prize, and that's an NBA championship. So I think there's going to be plenty of suitors for Mike Brown to where he might not have to settle for an assistant's role just yet.
Kevin Ollie, a possibility for one of the assistant jobs with the Thunder?
Definitely. I think the Thunder definitely has their eyes set on Kevin Ollie as you know, in some capacity. I don't know if, you know, they're going to make him an assistant coach or a player, more of a player development guy, but he's weighing his options. He's got some options with the UConn assistant coaching opening, you know, obviously that being his alma mater. He said that he'd prefer college coaching as opposed to NBA coaching. So we'll see. If that job is offered to him, I think he'll take the UConn job. But if it's not offered and the Thunder likes him and wants to keep him around Russell Westbrook and Eric Maynard, because he had a big impact on those two guys too, as well as the entire team with his leadership and his veteran presence. So I think he could realistically be here with the Thunder if UConn doesn't come calling first.
Lastly, for both you guys, Chad Ford's mock draft 4.0 is out. We're still waiting for Darnell Mayberry's mock draft 1.0, but that's coming Sunday, and that's not on Darnell, that's on me. But we're going to come out with that, and he's going to have some 2.0s and 3.0s and 4.1s. But anyway, the latest one's out. It's interesting. There's an interesting name associated with the Thunder, Oklahoma City's own Daniel Orton. Tyreek Lee, watching from afar, would you be fired up for the Thunder if Daniel Orton would fall to him at 21?
I'm not sold on Orton just yet. I mean, I've seen him play 5-6 minutes a game behind Cousins. I'm just not sold. I mean, he's big. He's a big kid. He has a lot to develop. But he might come in and be like a Jermaine O'Neal, or he might be like Sam Bowie. With big men, you never know. But, I mean, he's a big, strong body. It wouldn't be a bad pick at 21.
Chad Ford said the Thunder has been in on Daniel Orton from the start. I saw Sam Presti at one of his games when he was playing high school ball here. Darnell, how's that sound to you?
Well, he's definitely not going to be Jermaine O'Neal. I can tell you that right now. Definitely not offensively. Defensively, I think, is what intrigues the Thunder, is where Daniel Orton intrigues the Thunder. I mean, the fact that he can block shots, he could get better as a rebounder, but I think they like his tenacity, his toughness inside, you know, in the post. If he could develop an offensive game, it'll make it a sexier pick. But the fact that he could come in and sort of be another game changer that you could put back there with Serge Ibaka, and you've got two athletic guys who can change shots, alter shots, block shots, and rebound and sort of control that painted area, I think that's what intrigues the Thunder. I'm not so sure the Thunder is sold on his health. He had some knee injuries or knee problems in the past. And I think we're going to have another Tyson Chandler situation on our hands. I think they're going to have to go through do their due diligence, make sure that he's healthy. And if they have any questions whatsoever about that knee, I think they can pass on him. But, you know, this, you're right. I mean, usually where there's smoke, there's fire. And Daniel Orton's name has been associated with the Thunder for quite some time. He's coming in here on June 15th to work out. I think that's going to be that's about 9 days before the draft, 9-10 days before the draft. I think that workout could do a lot for Daniel Orton. I mean, whether or not the Thunder feels they can get him at 21 if he falls, or if they need to move up to get him. But I think that June 15th workout here in Oklahoma City is going to be a big indicator of what goes on.
That's it for this edition of Thunder Rumblings podcast. Stay with the best coverage team anywhere, every day at News OK, and every morning in the Oklahoma.
From the Opubco studios at Britton and Broadway, you're listening to a News OK podcast.